Welcome to The Emergence, a podcast asking the question, what is possible when we are connected and in control? Today's episode is a conversation on augmented and virtual reality with Rami Kalla, who owns Point in Time Studios in Tempe, Arizona. I first ran across Rami when I was researching virtual and augmented reality for a project I was looking to get into at the time. Even though the project never went through, I stayed in contact with Rami through social media and have been struck by his zeal for life, his authentic and team-focused approach to building his business, and a forward-leaning vision of a future where experiences created will no longer be in front of us, but will surround us. I've always planned a series of episodes dedicated to immersive technologies such as virtual, mixed, and augmented reality, as well as spatial computing, as I believe these technologies will speak incredibly well to the ideas of exploring human potential, which is a core theme of The Emergence. But I also believe there are potential threats on the horizon if the user is not in better control of the experiences found through these devices. So I wanted to bring Rami on the show to help better understand the opportunities in this space, as well as potential obstacles in front of us. So welcome to The Emergence, Rami.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Paul, for having me. Super excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just kind of dig into it. We got about a half hour, 40 minutes. First, we'll talk a little bit about your background and what brought you to starting a media production studio.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great question. So I started, really kind of goes back to when I was really young. So about 10 years old, my father brought home one of those big cameras that was connected to the VCR. And I just fell in love with the whole thing. I took the camera, you know, read the instructions, started making short films with friends and family. And I was kind of known as the film guy, the film kid around town. So I just enjoyed the whole storytelling process and I love technology. So, that was kind of where it started. And then, you know, went to ASU, studied business and entrepreneurship and Spanish, lived abroad for a while, came back. I worked for General Mills. I learned how to, you know, the big companies work doing marketing. And then I'd say about 3.5 years into that, I got really just disenchanted with the corporate environment and decided to start Point in Time. And so we've been a business now for 20 years. And we started off doing, you know, small videos, events, corporate videos, and then got into doing local commercials. And now we're doing everything from national commercials, 3D animation, and virtual and augmented reality experiences. So it's been really awesome. We've definitely, you know, always, you know, my dream is to stay on the cutting edge and, you know, focus on, you know, making sure you're in front of the game and not allowing yourself to be a dinosaur and become extinct. So that's always, you know, the trick and kind of what the tech is and being at the forefront of that. So we've been really lucky. We have an awesome team. So, yeah.
Great. Perfect. So can you kind of, let's do a little bit of a dive into the types of projects you're working on with your clients for VR, AR. I know you're doing some things with homeowners and it sounds super interesting. So can you give us a couple of examples of the types of VR and AR work you're doing?
Yeah. So we've got, it's a great question. So I started off doing virtual reality. Really my first experience, I remember I had a headset on and I'm sitting courtside watching LeBron play basketball. And I said, this is really the next evolution, interactive immersive media is VR. And VR has been around for a long time. I mean, it's, you go back to flight simulations that the Air Force has used to, you know, old cave drawings, right? You know, tens of thousands of years ago. So panoramics is not new, but the technology finally caught up. So, you know, from the software to the hardware. And then we saw big companies like Facebook with Oculus inventing or, investing millions and billions of dollars, you know, into the technology. So that was kind of the start for me. And then I was actually building a new home and I'm in the design center and they're like, okay, imagine this tile, this, you know, with these countertops and those cabinets. And I said, I can't say, why is this not in virtual reality? They're giving you just a little tile to imagine this with. And I said, what if I could walk into my new home and see it and then choose and select in the VR. So I went and invested some money. I brought in some new team members and we built out this program. Well, I started taking it to new home developers and, you know, did that around the country. And it was just a little ahead of its time. This was several years ago. You know, they weren't really ready to give up the design center. So then I shifted and I focused more on student multifamily. So younger demographic, people that, you know, are early adopters of technology. And that's where we've really, you know, focused on, or like the high rise living, the student housing, and allowing people to come into the new space. You know, we have games, cornhole, football. You can open doors. You can walk around. You can watch a football game in the Jumbotron, all in an immersive experience. And it completely revolutionized how you buy and, you know, rent property. Well, then of course, speed that up and COVID happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, we've already been doing this for years. You know, we grew about 60% last year. We're going to grow over 50% this year. A lot of just the way people change how they were living, and people say, "Hey, I can't travel, obviously, with COVID restrictions. And now I think it's just it's people realize the convenience of VR, and that's really changed the real estate world. And so that's a big area that we plan. The other side of it we also do is in the training piece of it. So we had Axon Taser approach us about last year and said, you know, we want to create these immersive experiences for police training. They were trying to find a way to really add value to their customers. And so what we did is work with them and created these basic programs where we put you in it, like, for instance, a domestic violence situation. In that situation, you have to, you know, basically choose your own adventure. So you're the police officer, you're in this scene, and you're seeing the, you know, the argument, the husband, you know, pulling a knife out. Like, it's really intense. You have ambisonic sound, see the heart beating. And then it's a choose your own adventure. So if you choose the right thing, she lives, the wrong thing, she dies. And so we've done a series of these videos, and they've been a huge success, you know, with the police force around the country. So just some really cool out of the box type of things we've done in VR. So.
Oh, nice. Nice. And, yeah. So let's, that is super interesting, because I've been listening to some of your YouTube podcasts and yeah. things like that. And very, very interesting that you're, definitely on the cutting edge, without a doubt. And I guess for some people in the audience, it could almost be confusing with VR, AR, MR, XR, spatial computing. So let's kind of unpack that a little bit. Can you talk about the differences between those technologies?
Yeah, people like to interchange the terms, the terminology. You know, when it came out, there were some basic terms, and then it kind of got muddled a little bit. So I just try to make it very simple. So people like to use the word virtual reality. Well, true virtual reality is different than 360 video. So for instance, if you're on YouTube, and let's say you've got your phone on, you use your gyroscope, you're looking around, you're in a 360 environment, especially if, like, you know, you can go to watch the Blue Angels. That was one of the biggest, you know, first ones that kind of popped out. You're in the cockpit and you're looking around. That's a 360 video or a 360 panoramic video. So in that situation, you're in one place and you can just look around. You can't actually walk around in the space. Then the next evolution will be done is virtual reality. With true virtual reality is a CGI environment. So in other words, you've got the headset on and you are completely immersed. You can't see anything in front of you in the real world. You are in that environment. And what we do is room scale. So as I take a step forward in VR or in the real world, I'm taking a step in VR. So that is a true CGI virtual experience, or what we call VR versus 360. Now, and again, with 360, you're also fully immersed. Then you go into augmented reality. So augmented reality uses basically a 3D CGI world and layers on top of the actual real world. So a great example I always use is Pokemon Go. People are using their phones and you can see a Pokemon sitting on your desk. So that's an example of where the 3D environment or the 3D assets are being layered into the physical real world. Now, mixed reality means I can interact with it. So if I poke that little Pokemon in the belly and he giggles, that's a mixed reality environment. I can actually physically interact with that 3D world. So that's mixed reality. And then they came along and said, okay, the industry said, we're going to create one term. So they came up with XR, right? So XR really is the umbrella term to cover all of those different types of things. Whether it's VR, AR, mixed reality, and, you know, and that kind of just simplified that umbrella. And then, you know, if you want to get into, you know, you can go down the rabbit hole, you know, we do ambisonic sound. So basically what that means is, you know, the sound is all around you. So if you hear somebody coming at you through the, you know, back door, like for instance, the police training, you can turn around and see that sound is coming from behind you. It doesn't sound like it's just regular, you know, stereo, it's ambisonic. It's fully around you and it's a 360 audio experience too. So we, you know, as we got into these and, you know, starting to build up these experiences, you know, there's not a lot of people doing it at the level we're doing it at. So there's definitely, you know, we love challenges. It's definitely been some, but, we've learned and just got better along the way. So hopefully that kind of just explains some of the differences.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the whole spatial computer, computing where you talked about with the audio, the ambiance that surrounds you is that, you know, in the future, these layers are going to be loaded over in our windshields and our cars and mirrors and anywhere where there is a window into something, it'll layer it over it. So it's not only putting on our glasses, it's holograms that can actually come up and sit on our table. And
100%.
And it really is going to, I feel, change the fabric of how we engage with not only commerce, but how we engage with ideas and each other. And I think it's so incredibly important for companies that are creating these tool sets. You know, there's the hardware side, like the Oculus and the software, the programming, that is incredibly important. But we're almost at a stage now where people like you and your company, Point in Time Studios, is that, you know, let's take off the gloves and let's start digging into the meat of the applications. And you know, what are the applications like you're talking about with police? I've had an episode here talking about police reform and talking about exactly what you had mentioned, is that what kind of experiences could we create from the community for the police to better understand what the community members are going through? And then on the same token, what the community members, how they see the police and how they interact with them. I just really feel that, you know, we need to kind of evolve past the fact of worrying about the technology and the labeling, and let's really start to dig into what can these things do.
Yeah, the application is really endless. And when VR started to come out, you know, initially, people were, you know, like initially like, oh, I want to do this, I'm gonna do this. And I had to kind of those conversations, say, okay, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Right. So let's not just try to apply it to everything, but let's look at the situation and see what are we trying to accomplish. And VR is, you know, awesome. And so is AR, and it can be applied to a lot of different scenarios. But it's not just a one size fits all, right? So let's do it for everything. But I would say that you know, like one of our customers, NXP, came to us. They're one of the fifth largest semiconductor companies in the world. And this is when they were rolling out the 5G semiconductor chip. And they said to us, hey, we have a challenge. We're trying to really, you know, market this product. And we're going to be at a trade show with a lot of engineers, a lot of people. And we've tried traditional video. We've, you know, handed out little trinkets, pens and candy. It just doesn't work. What can we do to create an immersive experience? So I said, let's try this. I said, let's have some fun with this. And we're going to actually put you inside the chip. So shrink you down to Ant-Man size. We're going to put you inside the semiconductor chip. While it's firing off, you can look around in this like Tron-like environment. So when you put it on, you think you're in a city, right? You think you're immersed in this other world. And if you're an engineer and you look at it, we actually built it to spec. So it is exactly what it looked like if you were actually inside the chip. So it was a huge success for them. People were lined up around the booth to experience this VR. And it was completely different than everybody else was doing. So it just one of those, you know, situations where you're able to kind of take something, think outside the box, and help to apply it to them, you know, for marketing purposes. We did another project also in actually right before COVID in London. It was a project this client was building in Spain. It was right on the water, and they were doing a full remodel. He had bought it out of bankruptcy. It was kind of old, and he was like, I'm having a hard time selling the vision. You know, we can do renderings, we can do other things. He's like, what could we do? And I said, listen, why don't we do it in virtual reality? We can put them headset on. They can walk up to the balcony. They can see the Mediterranean Sea from their new jacuzzi and make this fully immersive experience. So we flew to London at a home show, and it was a huge success. We had people lined up, and they did, I think, over 10 million in one weekend, doubled it the next weekend. Nobody had to leave London. Everybody signed up and bought villas in Spain just from the VR experience. So it was that was one of the moments where I was like, wow, there's some real ROI here.
Yeah, it is crazy.
It was awesome. But yes, I mean, and to your earlier point, VR is and essentially AR, and they've always said this, you know, VR is huge. AR is going to surpass it. Yep. It's going to completely revolutionize how we live our daily lives. And I tell people all this time, and I think partly it scares people because especially the older crowd, you know, we're just so used to the living the way we live now. But like you said, heads up display, you know, you see with the HoloLens right now, but you know, we're seeing Apple has got, you know, patents out for their AR glasses. I've been to San Francisco meeting with other companies like Samsung and Sony and Bose, and they've all got, you know, different wearables and things that they're working on. And you're going to see this explosion of, you know, very lightweight, small glasses that people are going to wear, and they're not going to look goofy like Google Glass. They're going to look like normal glasses. And then you're going to see the evolution of contacts. And then, of course, the final of, you know, anybody who, you know, wants to read any of Ray Kurzweil's work for the singularity.
It's going to be brain.
It's going to be brain implants. So that's where it's going. It scares the heck out of people. But, you know, if you watch, I'm watching the movie, the show Manifest right now, and it's funny because I'm watching my wife. And they have it laid on there. And before she said anything, I said, oh, collective consciousness. My wife is like, oh my God, like I can't watch anything with you. that's what Elon wants. Like,
yeah.
We're going to be sharing experiences. And if you read Ray Kurzweil's book that was written 20 years ago, you know, it's a simple, you know, thought. I want to go into VR and it's implanted and you don't have to put a wearable on. So this is where it's going. We're going to be making phone calls, surfing the web, designing our home, you know, interacting with friends and family, all of it's going to be in AR.
So yeah. It is incredible. And so, you know, I'm a fan of John Dewey, who is more or less the founder of kindergarten and really changed the educational system of the turn of the 20th century. And his big thing was on experiential learning, about, well, you know, learning beyond just what's in the textbook, but learning what's around you. So I just see this whole thing when we put the glasses on the positive thing, because there are threats. Like I said, we'll get into that in a second. But that positive part of that is that, you know, you go to a fishing hole with your dad, and you could truly understand what surrounds you. But my biggest fear is that I don't want to have things pushed to me. I don't want to have advertisers saying that, oh, this fishing rod is available at Kmart. You know, if I want to look for that, I can choose for that. But just to imagine the possibilities of what information could be found in a specific type of bush or the area. What is the farming community done in that area? I mean, you know, when we start to learn with what's around us as opposed to in front of us, I think that we can completely go into a more engaged realm of where we're really trying to tap into our potential. And again, there are threats, but let's talk about the good side of that, of all the applications.
I think that, I mean, for instance, I was in Austin today and I was going to meet my son for lunch, and I got turned around and I'm using my Apple Maps, and it had me going the wrong direction. I thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I had, you know, my AR glasses on and just sort of like, you know, layered on top of the street and said, turn here, walk here, you know, and made it really simple. You know, sometimes our mapping system isn't great. So just a way to find things. But of course, on the flip side of that, people like to, there's some people say, well, I want to get lost. Like, I want to explore. I don't want to have, you know, somebody telling me, but we've already been inching towards this, where we're so dependent on our phones, which, by the way, in, you know, 10, 20 years, it's going to be a dinosaur. It's the equivalent of me telling my children, you know, look at that payphone. Like, what is that? It's all going to it's all going to be voice activated and wearable. But that's a great example of, like you were saying, I'm out of town. Like, what are the best places to eat? You know, what are the sights to see? You know, having that display come up and show me where to go, what to do, you know, similar how we use Yelp, but more interactive. And you know, you said you could be fishing, you'd be doing activity, you know, and having, you know, guide you through those things. So there's a lot of great applications where it essentially will make our lives a lot easier. And like you said, they're already doing that now with cars and having, you know, heads up display on windshields. It's just a difference as you're now wearing it. So there's a lot of great things like that. But of course, you know, with anything else, the flip side of it is the advertising, right? So, you know, with, you know, having Google, and you know, you have, you know, people, you know, pinging you with ads and you know, tracking you with cookies, you know, and then you've got, you know, ad blockers. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think it's going to be open, and advertisers are going to take advantage of it. You're going to be walking by the mall and Macy's is going to ping you. Like, you think of like Beacon Technology, hit your wearable, you know, and then you're going to hit by Nordstrom's and there's going to be a sale, and it's going to be annoying. And I think then they're going to have to quickly come out with a way to block, or, you know, spam block a lot of that stuff, because it is going to get, you know, very intrusive with all the advertisements. So that I would say is, you know, and I have videos on that I share when I speak that kind of show an example, you know, how nuts it can be.
Minority Report. Google. Yep.
Yeah. There's actually one, it's called Hyperrealism. If you go to Vimeo, your viewers can go to Vimeo and type in Hyperrealism. And there's a really great short film that this director put together. It's like probably 5 to 10 minutes, but it just shows you how bananas it could be with advertising. And it was made a few years ago, and I use it on my presentations, but it's a fun watch.
Yeah. And that's the thing. We can talk about the obstacles and threats right now. It's the noisiness of, you know, there's a lot of noise just in social, Facebook, Instagram, Google, as it is. And, now there are some core technologies on the emergence one. I talk about some of these fundamental technologies, peer-to-peer technologies, and what Tim Berners-Lee is doing with decentralizing the webs through Solid framework. And, I do think that's one of the reasons why I have this podcast, is to continue to fight for these ideas. Is, you know, at the same time, I want to fight for these new brilliant technologies that are going to come. At the same time, I want to fight for not only to block advertising. I like the idea of allowing consumers to have more of a choice in what they are advertised to.
Sure.
You know, so what's coming in? Can they control that? And especially in AR, when you think about being able to choose things and, you know, consumers being more involved with their, with the things that they're interested in. And if there's a product, that they can have, you know, toilet paper is toilet paper, and there are some things that are just necessities, but there's also stories behind the brands that offer these things. So is that a way right. that we can, through VR AR, is really allow the consumer to have more of a choice in finding and kind of filtering and tuning these experiences based on the company, you know, the company characteristic, the values beyond just right. the product itself. And have you had any exposure to things like that or thoughts on that?
You know, a little bit. My brother's in machine learning and AI. And so, you know, from a programming standpoint, it's definitely possible. I think what you're going to see, though, you know, initially, like every tech, you're going to see a lot of people get into the market. And then you're going to see kind of that centralization where kind of the, and you're already seeing with VR, you know, Lenovo being purchased and other companies, you know, so you're starting to see really it's HTC and Oculus. So they're kind of the two big players now in VR. And then I think you're going to see the same thing in AR. I mean, Microsoft HoloLens is sort of the leader in that. Price point is still too expensive for the average consumer. But when that price point becomes, you know, reasonable, and you're going to see, again, you're going to see some other players. But my concern is then when, okay, what happens when it's, let's say, Microsoft and Apple, where they're the only two players controlling, you know, that market. And so, you know, to be able to, you know, write code and change some of the, you know, application where it's not so intrusive might become somewhat more of a challenge. So that is definitely my concern. But I think that the younger generations, you know, the Gen Zers and earlier are going to be, I think they're going to be okay with it. I think they'll have, you know, especially like my son, who's, you know, three, you know, he's going to grow into this technology. I mean, you know, I had his iPad up the other day and I was having a hard time with, he has this game on there as this little, console. And he just like, he literally took it for me and he just turned three. He's like, Dad, you got to push this. And he went, and pushed the thing. And I went, oh my gosh. Like he just, it's intuitive and he's grown up with it. So for him to put a wearable on and get advertising, I don't see that generation having an issue. I definitely see, you know, millennials, you know, Xers, possibly older, you know, Gen Zers not liking that as much. But you think about how much, you know, our cell phones now track us, right? People don't realize, like, you know, and you know, people say you talk about something, you all of a sudden you see an ad, you know, they're tracking your, you know, where you are online, where you are geographically. I think people have almost sadly come to accept some of those things. And I think you're going to see the younger generations. It's going to be sort of like, hey, I'm giving up, you know, I'm getting convenience, I'm giving up privacy. And it, you know, older generations definitely fight that a little bit more, but I think that's something people are more and more, we're giving up that privacy for convenience. Good or bad?
Yes. Yep. And it's coming. Yeah. And it's one of the things that I really am going to continue to fight for is just being aware of right. the technologies that can kind of push back on this a little bit. Absolutely. We have to move forward. We have to move forward on these, because it's just the potential of what we can do and what we can find and what we can discover through this tool set is amazing. There's even one of the things about kind of tying in advertisers with the application is one of the thoughts I had on, you know, a mirror is that, something, if you look into a mirror, it would cast an image over your face. So if you have a teenager that is, you know, playing with drugs, and then you could layer over their face what it looks like 30 years of meth on their face. And that could be sponsored by a healthcare company, you know, things like that. Because I just think as while we talk about the fun stuff and the entertaining stuff with these technologies, we should definitely talk about kind of the fabric of societal health that we can use and bring that along as well.
Yeah. I mean, I have a podcast, year2045.com. I haven't put any new episodes out in a little bit. We've been really busy, but, we did one on facial recognition and, you know, people don't realize that your face is the most unique identifier, more than your eye, more than your fingerprints and your gait, how you walk. And so, there's already technology that's being used in China where, you know, if you, go to let's say a sporting event and, you know, you have a different expression or you walk differently than what's been normally recorded. They can arrest you for pre-crime, actually detain you and question you and say, hey, you're walking differently today. Your facial expression is different today. And in the, you know, the aware of, you know, public safety, you know, we want to make sure that you're not about to do something wrong. So again, it's that privacy thing, you know, being able to scan, you know, if you're looking in a mirror and be able to track you, which is great. But at the same token, you know, I think that my fear is that governments already are and will use that to their advantage as well. So there's a flip side. I actually have a short film that I'll be producing this year, and it's kind of along those lines. It shows a dystopian future. It'll be a lot of fun because it's kind of fun to go down the rabbit hole and, you know, go down to, you know, and create sci-fi.
Hopefully that's
all that comes true. But you know, we're using my production team and, you know, doing what I do, I thought, you know, be kind of fun. I wrote it about 5-7 years ago, way before COVID. And so a lot of stuff that happened during COVID. I went, man, this is, I got to make this film. it's too in line with what's happening. So.
Oh, nice. Is it going to be more of a dystopian view of what's going to happen in the future, or is it kind of a, like a Black Mirror type of.
Definitely. I tell people it's definitely like a Black Mirror. So dystopian, it's further out in the future than now, but like the things that have been happening, you know, recently, it sort of plays into that, that timeline. So it'll be fun. And I think, you know, I'm sure a lot of your viewers have already watched the show, but Black Mirror is a great show. There are things on there that I watch it. I'm like, man, this is happening. Oh, that's about to happen. People don't know. They can watch it and go, oh, that's crazy. That's way out in the future. I'm like, no, it's actually not that far off.
Yeah, it is crazy. It is here. And I actually listened to your entire 2045 podcast that you're talking about with Vincent Serpico. And that was very interesting. And there was something that I want to segue into this next part, because you were talking about a helmet that was able to then or a device was able to kind of, if you put the glasses on, they can read your gestures and that could help kind of interact with the stories. And I want to start talking about, you know, how we can create new forms of storytelling through this, because I know I also found on one of your other podcasts you're talking about Freddy Krueger, I think, was your first short film that you shot.
That's right.
So, you know, when I think about how powerful storytelling can be, and I just love movies. I love silent movies. I just love all forms of movies. And even know what Charlie Chaplin and City Lights can do with expression only, you know. And imagine when we put these glasses on, and whether we're fully in or we have Charlie Chaplin in our room sitting in our chair or we're completely blocked out and we're immersed in that experience. So let's, you know, in the final part here, last 10 minutes, let's really kind of dig into that potential. Because it sounds like everything I've read about you, that you really are at the core a storyteller. And so let's kind of vamp on that a little bit on the future of storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what gets me excited is watching, you know, you watch the Next Generation Star Trek and the holodeck. And, you know, if you watch those old shows, and you put, you know, you're in that holodeck, and I loved, because they could go anywhere, right? They're fighting with pirates, or, you know, they're on another planet or somewhere, like, you know, completely different place than where they're at. And in those moments, you're fully immersed. And I always loved that as a kid growing up. And so with the advent of AR and being able to actually finally do that and be in your own holodeck, it just opens up a whole world of possibilities. And I'll give you an example. Like I always talked about this. I said, you know, my favorite movies is Braveheart. I said, wouldn't it be incredible to be actually on the battlefield as this fight's happening? Like, you're there, you're seeing this fight happen, and you're fully immersed, you know, in that scene. Like, how does that not change the whole storytelling experience, the whole movie experience, right? Because we've always watched it as a passive observer. We're sitting there watching the movie unfold. But I'm creating so much now. I'm creating so much content. We've gotten really good at creating in 360, where we put you in the action. And so I think, and I've had some talks with people in Hollywood about, you know, what does that look like? How do you create content like that? Because it's a whole new world. Because now in 360, you know, you're going to see everything. So you got to hide the crew, the lights. It is a process, and we can't always do that. I just actually shut down part of the 202 freeway for part of the project I'm working on, and we shot in 360. And I had to go and paint out lights and people. We have to digitally go and paint them out. It's called rotoscoping, frame by frame by frame. Mm-hmm, it's a very tedious process. So it creates a whole other animal, but the experience is 10x what you get just watching it on a flat screen. So that's what I love about it. You know, the movie Heat, being in the gun, you know, the gun scene, you know, the Robert De Niro, like, how awesome would that be? So, yeah.
Oh, I know. And you think about Hitchcock and you think about, because Hitchcock was such a masterful storyteller. If Jimmy Stewart is behind you and you think that he's going to come around, it's just these dynamics of when you're immersed and it surrounds you. And my thing is, and I've always thought this, and since I began with these ideas, 20 years ago, it's always about moving people forward. And whether you're entertained, to be entertained fully, to be in sports fully, to be, I just watched Master and Commander last night. What a fabulous film. And, you know, just the experience of being in the ship and yep. but there's nuances of even how Russell Crowe builds his team. You know, he's a right. he's somewhat of a happy, you know, what you wouldn't think of a typical, you know, a captain of a ship. But then when you see right. that he has the tension of having to be in the battle, you know, right. in the throes of battle, he yep. changes his nuances. So there's going to be so many things that we can do when it's opposed to it in front of you, when it's around yep. you, it can play on the emotions. And like when you were talking yep. Vincent Serpico, is if that could tap into possibly some of your emotions, it may in real time change that story based on your reactions, your sweat. You know, it seems weird, yeah. but as long as it's not, we don't have a Walmart ad coming up in the middle of
right,
Russell
right,
Crowe.
Right, right, right.
But there's so many freaking opportunities.
I would bet the shirt on my back that, you know, if he was to make, you know, Psycho right now, that he would have, because at that time, that was the most cameras they'd ever had in one shot.
Yep.
I think it was
yep.
like six or seven, you know, multiple positions around the shower scene when she gets stabbed. But, you know, if he could go, you know, fast forward and do that in 360, 100%, I think that Hitchcock would jump on that opportunity.
Oh, so, he would be in
it. Yeah. Oh. And from an emotional standpoint, I'll tell you, during COVID, like all of us, like it was hard. You know, I remember one night I was like, you know, I can't go to the beach. You can't go anywhere. So I put on my goggles and I said, I'm going to go to the beach in Australia. I found a 360 video and I'm sitting on the beach for about 20 minutes and I'm watching the waves come in on my Oculus Quest 2. And I'm like, it relaxed me. You feel like you're there, and mentally, you know, I would say if you can see it, touch it, hear it, taste it, smell it, how's your brain not know it's real? You know, my wife, and she was in labor, I actually put her in different scenarios, like underwater, you know, swimming with dolphins, sitting on the beach, and it helped her labor tremendously. And I have, you know, that was, you know, a couple, you know, scenarios of where you can change your state using virtual reality and get over even things like, you know, phobias of fears of spider or claustrophobia or things like that, and can change your emotional state just using virtual reality and being immersed. So the applications are endless.
Oh, it is. And I've been meditating for the last couple of years. And I just think that's a huge space. That's an enormous sure. space. And people Absolutely. Burn victims. I know they're using it for burn victims and to yep. be able to manage pain. And, yep. And you know, people do need an escape, especially with the noisy and busy world that we have, is they need to find ways to discover stillness. And yep. It's just, yeah, there's just endless applications. And I could go on for 4 yeah. hours with you on this, but I know you have a busy schedule. And so I just want to tell you, Rami, how much I really appreciate you coming on. I mean, you've always been so friendly in our exchanges on Facebook and email. And you seem to have such a good attitude, and it seems like you're really yeah. building a good company, a good solid company that's built on values and character. And
thank you.
So
thank
it's
you.
Great.
So, no, Paul, it's my pleasure. Like you said, I could go on and on for probably days on this. This is, you know, like you, I'm passionate about it. You know, we just love what we do. I have an awesome team, and yeah, we're just trying to create awesome content, and you know, we love it. You know, I think the space is continually growing, emerging, changing, and you just have to keep up. So it's been fun.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Rami Kala with Point in Time Studios, and I really appreciate you coming on The Emergence, and everybody, we'll just talk to you later.
Thank you, Paul.